Hello, everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, 27-year veteran of the NYPD. In the Madeline Soto case, much information has not come out because the police, Kissimmee police, have kept it very quiet. But we can recreate some situations that we know have occurred and examine them based on information that we do know. And one of these bits of information is right on this thumbnail you see on the scene, returning to the crime scene where Madeline Soto's remains were recovered. What does the crime scene tell us? Are there eyewitnesses to that crime scene? There's been reports that Stefan Stearns was seen at that crime scene fixing a flat tire. Was that a ruse? Was that designed to get him cover in order to remove the body from the car and dump it at that scene? That's very much what it seems like. And in this case, there was not just one crime scene. Of course, this area that I'm showing right here is where Madeline's remains were recovered. However, the location where the murder took place is another crime scene. The vehicle that Stefan Stearns drove to that scene with is surely another crime scene. And as I always remind everyone, the body of the victim is a crime scene. So what will returning back to that crime scene tell us? Well, we have many questions. Do the Kissimmee police have answers to these questions? I would hope so, and I would think so. But what everyone, of course, is waiting for is the autopsy results in this case that can tell us cause of death. We already know manner. This case has already been ruled a homicide. But cause of death can tell us a great many things. Bruising on the body. And we don't know about potentially forensic evidence. Hair, fibers, DNA. Remember, we always speak about on this channel Locard's principle of exchange. And that's where forensic evidence is exchanged between the parties involved here. And we expect the forensic evidence, of course, to come back to this evil-looking man on the screen, Stefan Stearns. And so returning to the crime scene is important, but and there also should be, in any crime scene, areas of entry and areas of exit. Where did he enter the crime scene? There were reports that he was seen changing a flat tire. Did he even have a flat tire? Or was that what we commonly call in law enforcement a ruse? Was that just designed to give him cover? Because let's not forget, it was daytime when we believe the body of Madeline Soto was dumped at this location. So he had to cover. He had to give himself cover so that people wouldn't see him, and they still saw him. But the ruse was that he was changing a flat tire. Do we think that the Kissimmee police know that was a ruse? Or do you think they're still going under the assumption that he had a flat tire? I think they know exactly the truth. Of course, so many answers to our questions can be answered by the Kissimmee police. However, smartly, and I said this a million times, they're not telling us. And I think that's a good thing for the power of this investigation. And we talk about the 60 charges leveled on Stefan Stearns. And when they bring this murder case forward and the evidence is clear and they have the evidence they need to get a conviction, those other 60 charges will not be as important, because what will be mostly important is the prosecution of this murder. Could this case bring Jennifer Soto in, the mom of Madeline? Could she be brought into this? Could she be an accomplice? I've suggested that right from the very beginning. And many people now are starting to see this when we've discovered that this investigation went back 6 years. 6 years that this demon, Stefan Stearns, has been living with this family. 6 years, this demon. And the mom, again, what is her role in this? Do we know? Do we even know? But we're going to find some of those things out. Hopefully we have answers to some of your questions today. So hold on to your seats. You're about to enter true crime from a police perspective. And you're about to enter the off-the-cuff zone, the police off-the-cuff zone. There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped in 10th and Grant.
We still don't know who pulled the trigger. You know, someone said in the chat, L'Oreal, thank you for the $5 super sticker. If he truly had a flat tire, then I'm calling that divine intervention. Very possible, L'Oreal, but it also could be what we commonly call in the police profession as a ruse, that he pretended this to cover the removal of her body from his car so no one from the road would see him. So that is also a possibility, but you could be right, L'Oreal. So returning to the crime scene where Madeline Soto's remains were recovered, Chief Minna, during this case, said on March 1st that investigators, he used the word confident, that Madeline Soto was already dead, having been killed at a Kissimmee home before Stearns moved her body. So that information came out very early. So they believed that the murder scene was inside that house. Now, the chief put that out on March 1st. So there is a hint that that's the number one crime scene, the home. According to Chief Minna, there was video evidence showing Stearns throwing items into a dumpster at the Kissimmee apartment complex around 7:35 a.m. on February 26th. The day she was reported as missing. The sheriff once later said that it found Soto's backpack and her school-issued laptop in a dumpster. While Stearns had reportedly dropped Soto off near school that day, Chief Minna explained that wasn't the case, and Stearns was instead spotted driving a vehicle with Soto's body inside. And according to Chief Minna, we have evidence that shows Stefan Stearns returning to the complex and Madeline was visible in that vehicle. We believe that she was already dead at that time, Minna said. And after a long search, Orange County deputies recovered Madeline Soto's body from a wooded area off Hickory Tree Road in Osceola County. So this is some of the information we had very early in this investigation, that her body was found early. So first crime scene, the home. What did the Kissimmee police recover in the process of the home that Jennifer Soto and Stephon Stearns lived in. If this was truly the crime scene, the place where the murder took place, what did they recover as a result of that processing of that scene? At this point, we don't know for sure what they recovered. And when a lot of people from the press call the location where the body was recovered the crime scene, yes, that's correct. But that's only one of them. That's only one of the crime scenes, right? And one of the main crime scene was the home that Stephon Stearns and Jennifer Soto lived in. And what evidence, what evidentiary material connecting Stephon Stearns to Madeline Soto's murder was found inside the home, inside that crime scene? Next place, next crime scene, of course, is Stephon Stearns' vehicle. What was recovered inside his vehicle that could tie him to Madeline Soto's murder? And these are all questions that surely the Kissimmee police have the answers to. And these are questions that we can ask, but right now they're not answering. They're not answering our questions. This was from Court TV. Let me play a little bit of this.
February 25th was Madeline Soto's 13th birthday party, a big day in any child's life, celebrating the end of one phase and the start of the next, the teen years. But tragically for Madeline, this was not the beginning of her teen years. It was the end of her life. She was reported missing the next day, but investigators believe she was already dead by 8:19 the following morning. They also say she was in the car of a man named Stephon Stearns, her mother Jen Soto's boyfriend. Stephon is currently locked up after police found disturbing images on his phone, resulting in 20 counts of child sex abuse related charges and 40 charges involving hundreds of images and videos of that abuse. Madeline's body was found 4 days later, 22 miles from her home. And tonight, we return to the scene, examining the location where Madeline was recovered. How could someone discard a body here in broad daylight? And what about the environment the body was in? Will the ME be able to recover useful evidence from the autopsy? What is the status of the murder investigation, and when will someone be charged? Tonight, we take a look at these questions live on the ground in Central Florida as we investigate the tragic life and death of Madeline Soto.
I'm Vinny Politi, and thank you so much for joining us tonight here on Closing Arguments. We have a big hour straight ahead, and of course, we're beginning with the case involving Madeline Soto.
So, of course, during this case, they're talking about the last day of her life. And we all know about her birthday party on the Sunday, and that potentially was the last time she was seen alive by many of the people that loved her. However, there's the question of timeline. When was Madeline Soto killed? And that question, we do not have the answers to yet.
That is... stepdaughter goes missing and gets a flat tire. Flat tire, missing child, same day. Does that make any sense to you? Is that like just a really bad day? Oh, you wouldn't believe it. My stepdaughter went missing and I got a flat tire. Got a flat tire doing what, where, when, why? We're going to talk about all this tonight. All of this tonight. Because this is a big part of this story. We're going to try to tie it together and see if there is a connection to all of it as we return to the scene. We, Closing Arguments, Court TV, returning to the scene of where Madeline's body was recovered. Important. So let's go back in time. Let's listen to Chief Betty Holland from the Kissimmee Police Department describing information that they knew at the time that this was a missing persons case.
Please share this crime line bulletin on my right of Stephen Stearns. He was last seen driving a silver 2010 Lincoln MKZ. The Florida tag is IYLL82. On Monday, February 26, between 1 and 2:30 p.m. in the area of State Road 192 and Old Hickory Tree Road, as well as Old...
If you notice, the picture of that car has the donut on the left rear tire, which is indicative of having a flat and changing it to the donut.
Hickory Tree Road and Nolte Road. During this time frame, it is believed that Stearns had a flat tire and might have been seen changing the tire in this area. If anyone saw this vehicle or noticed anything suspicious, we're asking that they call Crime Line.
Okay, so based upon what the chief said, let's take a look at a map so you understand the area that we're talking about and what exactly it means. And we begin, of course, with the location of Madeline's remains. And you look at that area, very green, not a lot of development. It's near a body of water. Now, State Road 192, a bit of a main road down there, a main highway. I remember when I lived in the area, I would drive on 192. And there you see where 192 goes. Now, let's take a look at Hickory Tree Road. Significant part of this, that's where the body is found, on Hickory Tree Road. And you see Hickory Tree Road kind of loops around and connects to 192 in two different spots. Now, Nolte Road, where's Nolte Road? Let's take a look at Nolte. Nolte kind of runs east and west, going from more of that St. Cloud area towards the Kissimmee area. And finally, they mention Old Hickory Tree Road. So you've got regular Hickory Tree, then you've got Old Hickory Tree Road, which connects 192 and Nolte. And that is significant here. As you take a look at the map, those two dots. And that's where police seem to be directing us towards for this flat tire. But is it Old Hickory Tree Road? Is it Hickory Tree Road closer to where Madeline is found? Well, let's do.
So folks, what are the important things here? And Vinnie Politan is sort of taking it very slowly. Did he truly have a flat? Or was this a ruse to pull over and to put the trunk up on his car to give him more sort of concealment from the road, that no one would see him doing what he was doing, which was dumping a body at this location. Broad daylight, right? So no one, apparently, as far as what we know, saw him dumping the body. However, what they did see was some man changing a flat tire. So someone did report that he was changing a flat tire. So what did they find at this crime scene? What was there? And I speak about, you know, this is at least the third or fourth crime scene in this case. And number one, of course, is the home, the location where Chief Mena says early on in this investigation that the murder took place. Number two, Stefan Stearns' vehicle. Absolutely huge, huge crime scene, right? Number three, the location where the body was found. And what could that reveal? Well, that could reveal a lot of things that we don't know. Evidence, hair, fibers, DNA, clothing, and then, of course, the body itself is a crime scene, believe it or not. Yes. And at the scene of a homicide, there are investigators from the medical examiner's office, and they're called medical legal investigators. And they respond to the crime scene, and they do their work after EMS must come to the scene and pronounce the person, the body on the scene, dead. After that, the police department's crime scene unit Well, process the whole scene. What are they looking for? Well, they're looking for evidence. And when I talk about evidence of entry and exit, where did he go? Was there drag marks, or was he able just to pick up the body? Madeline Soto, I don't know what she weighed, 120, 130 pounds, maybe. Most strong males could pick that person up, but he probably didn't want to throw her over his shoulder because someone from the road could see him. So was she wrapped in something? We don't know. That was never revealed. So could there have been drag marks on the ground that would be indicative of someone dragging a body into a location and then dropping it? Was the body face up? Was it face down? What position was it in? All of those questions we have not yet been answered for us. But these are some of the questions. Then I alluded to medical legal investigators. Again, they do their work after EMS pronounces, after the crime scene unit takes their photographs, collects the evidence. Now we have the medical legal investigators. And what do they do? Well, they examine the body from a medical legal perspective, temperature. They take the body's temperature. You know, is temperature going to tell us a lot in this case? Well, we don't know how long the body was left out there. What was the body temperature? That's part of every medical legal investigation. What state was the body in? Was the body in decomposition? And they know the murder occurred between Sunday and Monday, and it wasn't recovered till Friday, and it was left outside. So it was probably in a state of decomposition. Could they have observed injuries to the body? For example, bruising on the neck if the cause of death was asphyxia. So all these things would have been done by medical legal investigators, and they would examine the body all over for bruising, wounds, stab wounds, signs of blunt trauma. They would look into the eyes for something that's called petechial hemorrhaging. And petechial hemorrhaging is indicative of death by asphyxia. And what it is blood vessels in the white part of your eyes. When you're struggling for air, they break. They break, and they will cause what appears to be severe bloodshot in your eyes. And that is called petechial hemorrhaging. And that is a definitive sign of asphyxia. Not 100% this person's petechial hemorrhaging, cause of death was strangulation. But it is indicative, is one of the signs of that. After the medical legal investigators are through with their processing of the body goes on to the morgue wagon, and it goes down to the medical examiner's office, where an autopsy will be completed. And many answers to our questions would be answered and will be answered by the results of the autopsy. And I know that the Kissimmee police know the results of the autopsy right now. We just don't know it.
A little investigation. And when I say investigation, I mean, let's go to Court TV producer Cody Thomas, joining us live tonight from outside the Kissimmee Police Department, who's heading up this investigation. He has spent all day today down there. So let's start with where you went today. Give us sort of the backstory, where you went, why you were going there.
Well, good evening, Vinny. Of course, we went down Hickory Tree Road where Madeline Soto's body was ultimately found by the Osceola Police Department. And as I was going down that road today, I noticed on either side, there's not really much there. It's pretty flat. I know she was found in a wooded area. And of course, as we kept going down that 3 to 4 mile span of road, we ended up finding the exact place where she was found, signified by a memorial by the community. Let's take a look. So we just turned onto Hickory Road where Madeline Soto's body was found, not to be confused with Old Hickory Road. That's where police and investigators say They did catch Stephen Stearns in that 2010 Lincoln MKZ changing a tire the morning of February 26th when Matty Soto went missing. But as we look out here on Hickory Road, we see that it's pretty flat. There are some wooded areas to the left, but it's pretty flat, not too hilly. There's some cows out here, some private farmland. It's a little bit residential, not too busy. We've seen 4, 5, maybe 6 cars tops. We've been on the road maybe about a mile, a little over a mile. And as I'm noticing some of these light posts, there's no sort of security camera.
See, one of the things in this this reporter here is Cody Thomas is his name. He's pretty sharp because he's doing a sort of a canvas of the route that Stephon Stearns would have taken. And he's looking at the light poles. Is there any video? Are there any speed cameras, red light cameras, all those things? We live in such a digital world that everything is tracked all over the place. And this guy, Cody Thomas, a producer for Court TV, pretty sharp. And he's going over and he's explaining to us what he is looking for.
Type deal going on out here. And again, on either side of the road, it's pretty flat. You know, not many woods except for way back at the tree line, at the wood line, off the land, away from the road. I don't see much wooded area up towards the asphalt. But that's not to say there isn't some of those areas as we continue on down the road. Now, as we continue on down Hickory Road, we are starting to see a couple more cars. There were 3 that just passed us right there. And actually, as we're coming up down here, I see some cars parked off to the right, or to the left of me, excuse me. And this actually looks like on the right, if you look up to the right of the road, that is it. That's the exact spot where Matty Soto was found. You can see that memorial. We have some community members out here putting some things together. So, and these trees right here off to my right, that is where Matty Soto's body was found dead by police. Now, we are actually at that site on Hickory Road where Madeline Soto's body was found. And if you follow me and look down the stretch of this road, there's not much on either side. I know she was found in a wooded area. It's kind of desolate on the left, a little desolate on the right. You could easily view something from the road if you're passing by. But right here behind me is the memorial site, actually where she was found, right in between those trees. And we actually have some community advocate members out here with us. And they tell us that one of them actually has been in contact with the owner of this land right here behind me. And that day, that morning of February 26th, they say that gate was open. They've talked to this owner of this land. The gate was open and that owner is mourning because now they're having those thoughts. What if the gate was closed? What could I have done different? But ultimately, again, right over here between these trees.
Could it be a possibility then if the gate was open that day? Could it have been a possibility that Stephon Stearns drove into that wooded area to give him cover and concealment and bring the body right close and then drive back out of there? He would have a window of possibility because, as we know, not that many cars go by there. So could he have picked a window of opportunity, drove in there, and disposed of the body very quickly and then drove back out? That is a distinct possibility. But again, as part of the crime scene, I believe investigators would see if there were any tire marks that it could have possibly driven into that location, since we just found out that the gates were open.
Trees, where Madeline Soto was found here on Hickory Road. Now, just across the street here in this area, this little divot off of Hickory Road, is where a witness online describes where he saw Stephon Stearns kneeling down, changing a tire that morning of February 26th when Matty Soto went missing. Now, you can see it's just a little gravel divot, a lot of flat land back here, private farmland. Now, police describe the area they saw that flat tire situation on Old Hickory Road. There's an Old Hickory Road and a Hickory Road. Hickory Road, again, across the street where Madeline Soto's body was found. So there could be a little confusion as far as what witnesses may or may not have saw between the two, that is Hickory Road and Old Hickory Road. But one thing we do know, again, right across the street And that tree line behind that memorial, over the fence, is where Madeline Soto's body was found on March 1st.
You know, Pauline Buckles, I could see why you were confused, right? And I just want to go over this quickly. In the time frame on 7:35 on Monday, 2:26, Stefan Stearns was seen throwing something in the dumpster in the complex that they lived in. And that turned out to be the laptop and Madeline Soto's backpack. Now, at 08:19, he was seen returning to the complex with Maddie's body inside his car. So wherein lies the confusion is, so did he then leave the complex again and dump the body? That's what he must have done, right? Dump the body at the crime scene where the body was discovered, because he couldn't have returned to the complex with, according to the video from Chief Minna, that she was in his car. And at that point, she appeared to be dead. So yes, Pauline, I could see where therein lies the confusion, but this is the one of the at least four crime scenes.
And Vinny, as we stood there for the half hour, maybe 45 minutes, we were there at least five, six, seven people pulled up to that memorial, adding more things, teddy bears, notes from all over the country, paying their respects to Madeline Soto and her family.
So a couple of things jumping out to me tonight, Cody. Number one, it's flat, right? Florida is generally flat, and that area is absolutely flat, right? So you have the wooded area where the body could be secreted. But to get the body there, if you're parked on the side of the road and you got your trunk open, your door open, whatever, anyone driving by is going to see it. It's the middle of the day.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, where I was standing at, I was looking right across. It wasn't even 30 feet away from it. And if it's broad daylight, there's cars coming by, you would easily be seen. There's no way you would not be seen. Those trees are right there, maybe 10, 12 feet from the road, right behind that fence where the memorial is sitting with all the teddy bears and the windmills and everything like that. So you would easily be seen by a car coming by.
You know, I covered that before, and this this reporter, Cody Thomas, I really like him. But one of the things, and the whole question of the flat tire, I believe was to give him concealment so he could conceal what he was doing. So what better way where someone may not even give a second glance, oh, someone's changing a flat, and you sort of dismiss it because no one's expecting the car to be dumping a body. So he has that concealment where he pulls over and he pretends, maybe he actually even did change a tire. Maybe it wasn't flat, but surely the Kissimmee police would know this by now with their investigation. Charlotte CMGH from the chat. I wonder if he suffocated Madeline. Charlotte, I believe that they will know that right now. They do know that right now. Explore Core. Hi there. Wonder if you wanted body found. Lazy not put in. HTO Barry agreed to discard body because mother knew what he was up to. He seems more remorseful. You know, one of the things in the timeline, and Pauline Buckles raised the question, well, how was he seen at 08:19? And this was after 07:35 when he was seen dumping the backpack and the laptop into the dumpster. And then he's seen at 08:19 with Madeline in the car, but she appears to be dead at that point. Do you think perhaps he wasn't really thinking too clearly? And maybe he left the complex and came back and then thought, oh, I have to get rid of this. And then, I mean, I'm just giving you what could be a possibility. And we don't know that for sure, but for sure, and maybe the Kissimmee police don't know for sure what he did, because at some point, after they discovered the photos in his cell phone, at some point he invoked his right to counsel. And they never got a chance to interview him about the murder, right? But they did such a great job because they got him to give them permission to look in his phone. And why did he do that? Well, we know why he did it, right? Because he thought he had erased, that he had done a reset on his phone, a factory reset. And he thought everything is gone. So let these coppers look through my phone because they're not going to find anything. Guess what, dude? You didn't think of the cloud that everything's in. And then once they discovered all this bad stuff in his phone, which he had given them consent, I would imagine the Kissimmee detectives, they, after that, once they discovered these felonious photographs and evidence against him, they would have been smart at that point to get a search warrant. And we all hope that they do. So no smart attorney down the road will try to have this evidence thrown out. And so consent to search, have him sign a form. I hereby give the Kissimmee police permission to search through my cell phone, because he's thinking, oh, I did a factory reset. They're not going to find anything in my phone. But the dope doesn't realize that all of these photographs going back 6 years, these horrendous, horrific photographs going back 6 years are still stored in the cloud. So now the investigators, what are they going to do? Well, what they're going to do now is get a search warrant. And I'm pretty sure they probably did that. And I don't know 100%, but so that evidence will be solid. And that evidence, once they bring forth the murder charges, that'll be the underlined felony that'll make this a capital murder case, that will make Stefan Stearns eligible for the death penalty. Isn't this a horrific photo? There he is in his dopey Disney World outfit, you know? The number one place where a pedophile would want to work to be around children, Disney World, right? And there he is. And apparently there's evidence that that's where he met Jennifer Soto. So all of these things, of course, will come out. All of these things that we're bringing up as somewhat rumor, even the reporter Ken Jackson from the Osceola News said, I've heard that Jennifer Soto has lawyered up, but no one's coming out with specific confirmation, but no one knows where she is right now. Guess who would know if she lawyered up or not? Yeah, you got it. The Kissimmee police would know, and they would know they can't speak to her because she's invoked counsel. So we don't know that specifically, but I'm sure the Kissimmee police do. Folks, this is Police Off the Cuff, real crime stories. If you like real crime, true crime from a police perspective, then you're in the right place. And if you're not subscribed to us, go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, ring that bell, like us, share us with your friends and family. And if you want to contribute to us, we have a Patreon with three different levels, and we also have a YouTube channel members with five different levels. And we appreciate all you guys, our friends, our family, our subscribers, and we grow to love you as hopefully you grow to love us. So returning to the crime scene, let's get back to this whole premise with reporter Cody.
To think, right? So the question becomes this flat tire. Is this flat tire some sort of a ruse? Is there a flat tire? And then at the moment there's a flat tire, could he have allegedly gotten rid of the body because he had a flat tire? Or was the flat tire a reason to park on the side of the road? And in case someone saw him, there'd be a reason for him to be on the side of the road. Either way, it seems like, based upon that witness account in that area where you were, that's like right there. It's right there. It's the same. It's basically the same spot across the street.
Right across the street. again, that's a great observation. Literally right across the street, no more than 20, maybe 30 steps. And to your point, like, it could have been a ruse. It could have been an act just to seem as if you were doing something else, just to take an alleged dead body and go dump it across on that private land. But until we know more information, that's still up in the air.
Absolutely. So from your observations today, obviously a little bit more traffic because people are coming to pay their respects to Madeline, but how many cars that aren't stopping there are coming by during the time you're there, middle of the day, much like is alleged here that it could have happened in the middle of the day?
Middle of the day, we were out there close to an hour. We probably counted maybe tops 20 cars, 15, somewhere between 15 and 20. So it's not a very populated area. There's not much traffic coming through there. And again, it's pretty desolate either way. And that whole span of the road is maybe 3-4 miles long, no street lights. So if it's dark, it's really dark. But again, this was taking place in the broad open daylight and there were still not many cars coming by.
Right. And if you're there at night, I don't even know how you would find your way around. And an important piece of information, though, that the gate was open. If the gate's not open, there's no way for the body to be hidden near the wood line. It'd have to be right there, much more out in the open. So as you were there, you mentioned cars were stopping, people were stopping. So you bumped into some folks there. What are they saying?
Of course, they're saying the community is mourning this loss. And the people that were there that I saw were actually community advocates fighting for child abuse victims statewide across Florida. But one of them was a mom, and she says that this has completely torn her apart. She understands what Maddie Soto's family is going through dealing with this loss. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
The site tidy. The property owners were kind enough to let us keep the memorial honoring Madeline Soto and for the family and friends.
You know, folks, again, this is horrific in this area. This isn't unique to Florida. This type of abuse happens all over the country. And hopefully we can learn something from this so that this doesn't happen again. And in covering this case, I've done numerous shows and talking about, you know, the old adage, if you see something, say something. And that in this world, there are people who are known as mandatory reporters, people that must report signs of abuse when they see it. And if they don't, they can be held liable to the tune of a misdemeanor for failing to report. Sana Elise Holt Johnson, thank you for the NOK 14. I really appreciate it. You're a huge supporter of this show. Very much appreciate it. So going back, you know, to the crime scene here, it's something that, and some of you guys also in the chat have said, oh, why aren't they still protecting the crime scene? Once the police release the crime scene, it's no longer required as an evidentiary purposes. They've already collected the evidence, they've photographed it, they've processed the scene, and they released the scene. And that's the end of the scene. So I saw some of you guys were a little concerned in the chat. Oh, why are all those people there? They, you know, they're going to contaminate the scene. Well, they're done with the scene. So there's no thought of that right now.
It's trying to bond together, bonding as they're mourning. But she says that's the only way that this community is ever going to try to get over this terrible situation.
So, and this information is really eye-opening tonight, right? Being on the ground, to me, it's a much different perception I have of the area and what happened here. And then when it comes to the search, I mean, I've got to think that if police believe that search area or the area where he was spotted is across the street in that little turnaround area, the search makes sense, right? That particular area makes sense on Hickory Tree Road, not Old Hickory Tree Road. If he's changing the tire on Old Hickory Tree Road, there's a lot more ground to cover. Like, that's not... That's pretty far away from where you are. It's not like a walking distance or anything else. So there would be almost no reason to search the area where she was found unless there was some sort of connection to the suspect here, which is the changing of the tire.
You know something? Well, that's where Vinnie Paulton is wrong. There is always a reason to search. And I mentioned areas of entry and exit. How about areas of discarding evidence? Doesn't it make sense that a perpetrator would discard evidence close to where he dumps a body? Yeah, so I don't think Vinnie Paulton from Law and Crime Network is really thinking like in that way. But yes, every part, we don't know the cause. We know the manner of death is murder. The cause of death we don't know yet. Could it have been blunt trauma? So then could we be looking for a club or a bat or a hammer or something like that? Could it be a stab wound? We don't know then. Could we be looking for a knife that was discarded? So you get my drift without me naming every single type of weapon possible. So until we know that, yes, the area must be searched thoroughly. And as I said, areas of entrance and exit to a crime scene, some of the most important things that you can ever search.
And that is exactly right. We actually rode on Old Hickory Tree Road. And like you said, that was about 15 to 20 minutes away by car. So imagining walking that far, let alone with a body in a book bag
not
or a
happening.
Sack or whatever it may be, not happening, 0% happening. So to your point, for them to search in that area, there had to be a connection. There had to be some sort of sighting, something that put him in the vicinity for them to even begin to look there and ultimately end up finding her body there.
Yeah, because, and this, I mean, again, this is the middle of nowhere. These are farms, 22 miles from Kissimmee, 15 minutes from this old Hickory Tree Road. So I believe someone had to give them information to get them there. And it makes sense if this witness said that he was in that little turnaround area and saw the suspect there.
You know, one of the things also, and I don't have the exact location, but Stefan Stearns' car was caught by a license plate reader. License plate readers can be stationary, they could be mobile, and I would believe that this was probably a stationary license plate reader. So with that information, that will give you the geographic location where he was found. Explore Kerr from the chat. I agree that he convinced mother child was lying. My mother didn't believe me either. First, she believed that I was trying to get my parents back together. Later on, she said I wanted her man. You know, guys, I really want to mention all the people in the chat over the last few days, the last few weeks, that have been victims of abuse themselves. And I really, so my heart breaks that happened to you. However, it also is filled with joy in regards to the fact that you're willing to share it to help other people. And that's incredible to me. And I hope in some way, by getting that burden off your chest, it helps you a little bit too. And I always hope, and I say it to all the folks that are in the chat that this has happened to, I hope for your sake and your family's sake that you got help. For that, you really do need to be in therapy to erase those horrific memories and to get over it and to realize that it wasn't your fault. And sometimes adults make children feel like it was their fault. And that's horrific. And, you know, it's like the continuation sometimes of abuse where a victim can become an abuser. The cycle of abuse. It's almost like the cycle of violence in regards to domestic violence. That if it's not stopped and the person that's the victim of it doesn't get help, that can just continue and continue on and on and on. It's called the cycle of violence. And with this, with abuse, it's very common for the abused party to become an abuser. And that's so, so sad. So again, I just want to thank all you guys in the chat that came forward and share your experience, because I think it really does help others and help others to get over this.
With a tire iron, maybe changing it. That makes so much sense tonight, because without it, I mean, what reason would investigators have to search the area you were in? Like, it's nowhere near their home. And it's not near this so-called old hickory tree.
And again, Vinny, it is sort of, in all senses of the phrase, in the middle of nowhere. It was slightly residential, and by that I mean maybe 5 or 6 houses that were sitting on big plots of land. But there's not a lot of people coming through there. So to even have an idea to be out there, there had to be some sort of connection.
Absolutely. All right, Cody.
So in the middle of nowhere, exactly, and that's why he chose it. That's why this dirtbag did choose something in the middle of nowhere, because he knew that by choosing a place in the middle of nowhere, he'd most likely get away with dumping the body at that location. So that's exactly why he chose that. And you know, one of the things that we've learned from this case also in regards to Stephon Stearns, this goes back a lot further than we knew at first, than we were first told as we were looking at this investigation. And what I know from being an investigator and being in the police department for so long is that he's got many, many, many more victims, and they have yet to come forward. But that in itself is a scary thing. And maybe if we put his ugly mug out there, and we put it out there on TV, and we let people know all over the world what this guy did, then maybe more victims will come forward and point the finger at this dirtbag. I want to play this psychologist here.
Trial expert, witness, and columnist, Dr. Carol Lieberman. Dr. Carol Lieberman, what should we be thinking about? What is the potential? Like, what changed here?
Well, the typical thing that changes when sexual abusers stop is a few different things. One, some have age preferences. You know, some get more turned on or more attracted to children of a certain age. So when they get to be older than that age, then there's not as much sexual attraction or fulfillment. Another reason is some men get scared when the girl starts menstruating, because they don't like the possibility that they could, that's kind of shocking to them when, oh yes, wait a second, you know, there's the possibility of her getting pregnant. And then of course, as the older they get, the more there's the likelihood of them saying that they're gonna tell someone, you know, threatening to tell. Now, what I have found to be super interesting, chilling and ironic, but she had said there was a message on her phone where she said, once I turn 13, I want to go out into the woods, words to that effect. And of course, ironically, she was found in the woods, her body was found in the woods, but that is not what she had in mind. But what that does show is that she may have wanted to break free, and he may have gotten scared at that time.
Get out of that house of horrors.
You know, that's this is so interesting yet so scary, that the doctor here is given reasons for a potential motive for Stephon Stearns, because she was getting older, and because he's attracted to young children, he would no longer be attracted to her. Because she is getting older and stronger in her personality, perhaps game is over. This isn't happening anymore. I'm going to report this. Could that also be the reason that he committed this murder, to shut up Madeline Soto? So these are just some of the reasons. She mentioned that because she's 13 and going through puberty, she would start menstruating. And a psycho, sicko pedophile like this guy, for him, that would also be game over. Could these all be reasons? And you see all those charges listed. Could you imagine? He's probably got a phone book of charges if we look throughout his life and who this guy is. And it's so disgraceful. And you look at this picture here. If that doesn't make all the people watching this question, look at this dirtbag working at Disney World so he could be around children. Absolutely terrifying, right? Absolutely terrifying. And I would like to know, what does Disney do about vetting their employees? What is the background investigation to see that they don't attract people of this ilk, pedophiles, that they're not attracting them to come work as a Mouseketeer, you know, as a Disney character? Absolutely terrifying, you know? And what are they doing? Is there, Disney obviously has to have security, right? It's crazy. A Squared, the place he dumped Manny was either 6 minutes or 6 miles from Pedo and Son Santa. Soon as Stearns was arrested, Santa's house was raided and Son shot himself to death. Apparently Santa's second son, one of two. You know, A Squared, all of these things can be part, of course, of the larger investigation. No doubt this could have opened a Pandora's box of a ring, potentially. But I don't know that right now. And the police haven't told us that yet. They haven't released that right now. So could it have opened up a Pandora's box of a pedophile ring? Absolutely. Phoebe, it was reported that he did not work for, you know, whether he was subcontracted to a different company, he was still working on Disney property. He was still working in Disney World. Is he wearing that dopey red outfit? You know, Disney will probably try to make up every excuse on earth because you know what follows an arrest like this? Yes, you guessed it. Civil lawsuits. They'll be getting sued for failing to do a proper investigation on an employee like this. And whether they subcontract and get a guy like him to another company or whether they hire him directly through their human resources, it still is their responsibility to vet these people.
That she was living in. Let me ask you this. From what's been, again, these are the ones that I believe have been documented on his phone, and that's how they've gotten these charges going back to 2019. But I look at the dates. It's June, it's July, it's August, summer months when school is not in session. I'm looking at the years of the alleged abuse, 2019, nothing in 2020. Starts back up in 2022, 2023, into 2024. But that was COVID. Nobody's going to work. Nobody's going to work. Should we be reading anything into this? I mean, I'll tell you what my gut is telling me is that summer break, mom has to go to work. I don't think this guy works. Tried to get some work at Disney, not to make money. And then COVID, he can't be alone with her. Does this tell us anything about...
Because the mother would have been likely home.
Right, remote. COVID. Nobody was going to work in 2020.
Right. Yes, of course, also that could have been the time when they broke up. That reporter was saying that they might have had a gap.
Okay. So what are your thoughts now? Because there's a murder investigation going on. Do you think at age 13, would a child feel like now I can fight back? I'm not a kid anymore. I'm a teenager. I'm going to fight back.
Yes. 13 is a very, it's a crucial age. It's a turning point for a lot of kids in a couple of different ways. First of all, in regard to their mother, girls and their mother, it's a time when girls start, wanting to branch out into the world, maybe start dating and so on. And when mother looks at the girl and sees that she may be sort of It may be a time in her life when things are going down, or you know, not as exciting at the very least. And she sees her daughter blooming. Now I'm not talking about this family necessarily, but sort of in general. But also, you know, yes, I'm a teenager. I should be able to break free. You know, she said, I want to go in the woods. So what does that tell you? It really does tell you, I want to get out of this situation. And I think she might have felt, you know, in regard to him too, that it's time, you know, it's time for me to tell you no more.
And let's talk, everyone's still talking about mom as well. What are your thoughts about mother-daughter relationship? This stuff is going back to the time that she's 8 years old. Would you expect an 8-year-old to tell mom what's happening? Would it be obvious to a mother that something is wrong if an 8-year-old is being sexually abused?
Well, it certainly should be obvious to the mother, since he was living with them and so on. But there are reasons why mothers turn a blind eye. You know, the one is that I was mentioning before about, you know, when you want to hold on to the man, and this is what you sacrifice. I'll sacrifice my daughter. I know you want to have sex with her. I mean, it's unconscious generally. Also, you know, I was thinking, if it turns out that he was selling his photographs and videos and so on as pornography, then and would have been making money from it, then perhaps the mother knew she was complicit. She wanted the money from what he was selling.
Wow, there's so much for investigators.
You know, it's many folks, as I covered this case right from the beginning, many people would just they just couldn't accept that the mother was involved in any possible way. And I find it difficult to believe that she wasn't involved. How was this going on in her home? And a mother has a sixth sense, or else, as the doctor here was speaking about, chose to ignore it for reasons. Could it have been money? Could it have been that she felt her daughter was a rival to her in the attention from Stefan Stearns? Could it have been that she was just didn't want to break up the relationship? We all saw this, you know, the picture went from when she was interviewed. And most of that stuff was, you know, so many body language, people read her body language, and was she telling the truth? How did she not know? All of those things come into play here. And it's interesting that the doctor on Court TV said that she's turning 13. That's a milestone in her life. She's not going to put up with this anymore, because she's a woman. She's turning into a woman, and she's going to tell the authorities, tell someone what's going on here, that this monster, who you see a picture of him on the screen, Stefan Stearns, what he's doing to her. And unfortunately, that's probably what was the catalyst to him doing what he did. And again, we still don't know specifically if he is the murderer. Do we know that? But guess what? I have a huge problem with someone driving around with a dead body in their car, right? To me, that points to them as the potential murderer. I have a huge problem with that. Anyone else? Anyone else have a problem with a guy with 60 charges for sex offenses in his phone driving around with a dead body of the victim from those offenses? Anyone else have a problem with that? I think it's pretty safe to say that he did this. You know, Kim from the chat, I agree. I'm convinced she was involved, or at the very least, she knew what he was doing. The mere fact that she lied, seeing Maddie getting dressed at 8, she protected the pedophile. I 100% agree with you. Sue M from the chat, just body language aside, how do you not know? How are you not at your daughter's birthday party? Good point. Good point. Beverly Lawyer from the chat, my kids And grandkids taught, no one touches your privates, so you do not touch anyone's privates. Probably a good thing to teach your children. It's a tough topic to address your children with, but it's a necessary topic. Judy B. from the chat, it's mom's job to know, 100%. I mean, look, I was one of eight kids, and my mom knew when something was wrong with you. And I'm not saying anything like sexual abuse, but I'm saying, like, what's the matter? You're not acting correctly. You know, so it's a mother's sixth sense. And all you moms out there, I believe you have that, right? And you can't ignore it. You can't ignore it because Pauline Buckles, maybe Madeline didn't want her mom at her birthday party, but Stefan was there. Weird. Well, Pauline, that could be. Let's listen to Chief Mena here.
The complex, and Madeline was visible in that vehicle. We believe she was already dead at that time.
Welcome back. Despite all that evidence.
So that was the timeline that some of you guys have problems with, because at 7:35 on Monday, the day she disappeared, Stefan Stearns is seen throwing her laptop and her backpack in the dumpster on the complex property. At 08:19, that's 8:19 a.m., he's seen on the cameras in that complex with what appears to be Madeline inside his vehicle, but according to Chief Mena, she appears to be dead. So then what? Then he drives out to the location. So that's where people are having a problem. Well, he came back into the complex, or was he, how do you know he ever left the complex? You know, well, he must, yeah, actually he must have left and come back in, but then something happened where he went back out and dumped the body. So that's what we don't know. We don't have the full information right now.
Charges, which are very significant, especially now in the state of Florida. Sexual battery on a child under 12, 8 counts of that, okay? Significant. The other counts are significant as well, but that's the most significant. Why? Because of a brand new law down in Florida, which went into effect on October 1st of 2023, a person 18 years of age or older, Stefan Stearns, who commits sexual battery upon or an attempt to commit sexual battery injures the sexual organs of a person less than 12 years of age, commits a capital felony. It's now a potential death penalty for the sex crimes in Florida for someone under the age of 12, the victim. And you look, this goes back to 2019 now, right? Clearly under the age of 12. Going all the way to 2022, still under the age of 12 in 2022 in the summer. Now, here's the problem. The law went into effect in 2023. So is this a potential death penalty case just for the sex abuse charges? Let's bring in the think tank.
The answer to that, folks, is no. Because a law that's passed, say, in 2023 cannot apply to conduct that happened before the law was passed. So that's what his talking heads, these attorneys, are going to talk about, that no, it does not apply. We'll just give them their chance.
Joining us live in studio tonight, criminal defense attorney, entertainment attorney, former assistant DA in Atlanta, Daryl Cohen. Also with us tonight, criminal defense attorney and Emory University law professor, Molly Palmer. And finally, family law attorney and law professor at Emory University, Randy Kessler, is with us. So it's Daryl and the professors tonight. Great to see everyone. Can you punish someone for conduct back in 2022 and 2019 with a law that was passed in 2023?
I would hope so, but the answer is no, and that's spelled N-O. Unfortunately, it's called ex post facto. No.
All right, great explanation by that attorney. Ex post facto is the name of the law. So basically what it means is that you cannot, with a law that was passed in 2023, punish someone for something that they did in, say, 2019. you cannot do that. So they explained the law. You know, this case, so much of it, it's such a disturbing case, but so much of it is things that we don't know yet, and things that the police have not released yet. And we're going to find this out. And I have no doubt in my mind that Stephon Stearns is going to be charged with this murder. And then all of those abuse charges, they don't become as important because he's going to go away and may get the death penalty for the murder. And all those sex charges will be the underlying felony that makes this a capital case. Folks, if you're looking for a great attorney in the New York metropolitan area, then Joe Murray is your man. Joe's a retired NYPD police officer and a fantastic defense attorney. You can reach Joe on his cell at 718-514-3855. Email him at joe@jmurray-law.com. Go on his website, jmurray-law.com. Not only is Joe a fantastic defense attorney, but a huge supporter of the Police Off the Cuff podcast. There's Joe saying, "What do you want from me?" A good friend of the show and a big supporter. Folks, again, I want to thank everyone that, especially during the day, you guys show up during the day and watch. This is fantastic. I had a good crowd here today. Renee Voice Brand, several states have enacted laws that compel clergy to tell judges, courts, if a child who is deceased was sexually assaulted, could have passed the volunteer information to authorities. I don't know if the pastor would know, but yeah, he could. He could. You know, that's where confidentiality is blown to smithereens when someone admits to something of a horrific nature like this, or a murder or something like that, then those that have confidentiality when they're within their profession are not required to abide by it. So again, folks, I want to thank everyone for coming by today. When new information comes out on this case, I'll be all over it. You know, I'll bring it to you because I want to thank all you guys for supporting the Police Off the Cuff podcast, for coming by during the day here and cheering me on. I'm Bill Cannon from Police Off the Cuff, retired NYPD sergeant, Manhattan North Homicide Detective Bureau, 9/11 first responder, and I appreciate all you guys. Have a great day, and God bless. One episode, just ain't enough.